Hello, hello, hello. It is Tuesday, March 19, and on this day, 113 years ago, in 1911, the first ever International Women's Day was observed. I tried to find out why the date was then changed to March 8. The only thing I could find was that between 1913 and 1914, quote, following discussions, International Women's Day was agreed to be marked annually on March 8. That's it. No reason. Wonder what the reason was. Oh, to be a fly on the wall. Kia ora, this is Newsable. I'm Imogen, and this is What's Worth Talking About. What's the deal with our politicians talking so negatively about our country? A former royal correspondent joins us with the latest Kate Middleton news. I am starting to lose sleep over this one. Why one Queenstown man is building a home and giving all the profits to charity, and sorting postcards and counting penguins, the jobs available in Antarctica right now. All that's coming up in a moment here on Newsable.
Newsable takes time and resources to produce. Please support our mahi and visit stuff.co.nz/support.
Everywhere you turn at the moment, there seems to be groups worried about the upcoming budget and what they will or won't get, and it's not due until May. And it appears everyone, from ministries to community groups, is fighting to ensure what's important to them is funded, including the three parties tied together by agreements in this coalition government. Here to share his thoughts on how things are playing out, we're joined by political commentator Grant Duncan. Kia ora, Grant. Welcome to Newsable.
Kia ora.
The well-managed race through the first Hundy days is over. What do you think of how the coalition government is looking right now?
Now the really hard work begins, actually. Because now there's the question of how the present government will shoulder full responsibility for the direction of the country. Mm. It gets harder and harder now to blame the previous government. But of course, as we've seen recently, there are some fairly big egos in this coalition government, and they know how to get attention, and ACT and New Zealand First, both pretty keen to ensure that they not just get attention, but get some of their policy wishes through as well. So it's going to be interesting to watch.
Speaking of getting attention, Winston Peters had his State of the Nation address on Sunday. New Zealand First won just 6% of the vote. And sure, Winston Peters is the Deputy Prime Minister at the moment, but is that enough for him to stand up there and tell his supporters that New Zealand First is going to get the money for everything that it wants? What does that say about how the three parties are working together?
Well, I would say let's wait and see if he does get everything that he wants. And keep in mind that he was playing to the gallery there. And yes, of course, it's his job to not just get attention and rouse his base, but also to make it at least look like he's pushing through his agenda in government and scoring some hits policy-wise as well as rhetorically. Whether or not, you know, how successful he's going to be, we'll wait and see.
What's the deal with calling out your own coalition government's fiscal hole? Usually that's reserved for the people sitting on the opposite side of the house. You don't call out, the people in your own house. It's very strange.
I'm sure that Mr. Luxon knew or ought to have known what he was getting into. And so, yes, it is unusual, isn't it, for a minor party coalition partner to be calling out its own government, so to speak, of which it's a part. Mm. But this is what he does to get attention. He certainly put Nicola Willis in an awkward position, having to give some explanations before she's able to release details, of course. This is before she's actually able to get up in the House and release her first budget. And once again, we have to wait until we can see the whites of their eyes, so to speak, on the 30th of May.
Something that's also been quite noticeable lately is how negatively some of those in the coalition, especially the party leaders, speak about our country. What's the MO behind that, do you think? Constantly putting New Zealand down. Surely now the election is well past, we're past the Hundy days, it's time to switch up the talking points.
Well, I'd agree with you, and certainly Winston did go to town on a broken economy, but he was saying this is what the government had inherited from the previous one, and yes, he was very negative about the previous government. However, to give him his due, once you set aside the more inflammatory rhetoric, he did also make some statements about particular policies that he is wanting to get through in relation to, say, infrastructure, for example. And he did talk about wanting the economy to perform better, which I think probably we all do. He didn't really expand on those constructive points at any length. He was, I think, more wanting to reflect back what's going on in his base, which, let's face it, is quite disgruntled minority, people who are prone to conspiracy theories, who are anti-woke and all that kind of thing.
Mm, but Luxon as well can be quite negative about the country.
He has been.
Is that again just speaking to the party base and then as in this is how we are right now, but don't worry, National's going to get us back on track?
Well, this is the thing, isn't it? You either get back on track. And I think now is the time, now that the 100 days are over, now I think we should expect to hear from our leaders what that track is, and how we're going to stay on that track and where it's leading and those kinds of questions. But New Zealanders are very quickly going to get tired of that.
Mm.
And they're going to want to say, well, hang on, okay, so where are you now leading us? And so I would expect, I would hope, I think probably everyone would hope for something a bit more positive.
Political commentator Grant Duncan, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
We are yet to find out if there's a joggler amongst us. Yesterday we met the British man who jogs and juggles at the same time. And he says out of the 1,000-odd others that do it worldwide, there does not appear to be any New Zealanders that have made themselves known to him. But that may be about to change, because we asked you on Instagram if you'd give joggling a crack, and 21% said you would. Sure, 79% said no, thank you, but 21% of us could be future jogglers. Future Kiwi jogglers, to be precise. And if you do take it up or give it a crack, please let me know, because I really do want to have a yarn with you after you've tried it. Email us at newsable@stuff.co.nz. We are talking once again about Kategate, or Watergate, as I've recently realised, also works for this saga. There is still no further explanation to that weird photoshopping Mother's Day picture incident. In fact, the Prince and Princess of Wales' Instagram account is back to posting regular content, albeit missing Kate, and instead showing William attending various events as if nothing's going on. But there are some signs things will be played differently from here out, according to some reporting in the British press. Here to unpack all of this is Ellie Hall, BuzzFeed News' former royal reporter. Ellie, hello, welcome to Newsable.
Thank you for having me.
First of all, what is the latest? What is the latest news that we have about this Kate Middleton saga?
So the latest is actually a story that came in the Sunday Times, and it is basically an everything is fine, everything will be fine, it's all going to go back to normal soon. It did have some news that Kate will likely not be returning to events on Easter Sunday, but later on, because she and William will be taking time off for their children's April Easter holidays. So it's going to be pushed back even more than we already thought. It also reported that Kate will likely talk about her medical experience when she comes back into the public eye. It's something they've been considering, but very much when she herself can do it and not now when the whole world is talking about it. So I think it'll be very interesting to see how the royal family can play out this upcoming week to see if they can calm everything by themselves or if this is just going to keep ratcheting up the way it has been.
I think it's going to keep ratcheting up, if you ask me.
Yeah, Kensington Palace PR hasn't been doing a very good job at making it go away.
Speaking of Kensington Palace PR, can you explain to us the relationship between the Royals' PR teams and the British press, and the press in general, I guess?
Yeah, so the first thing you need to remember about how the Royal Family press system works is that it's not one big united team that sets the public narrative about the Royal Family. Each different sort of team on the royal family has their own press operations. So
right.
Buckingham Palace is the King and Queen's press operations, and Kensington Palace is William and Kate's press operations. And back when Queen Elizabeth was still alive, it was three press operations. So everybody's working on their own agenda. And if Prince Harry is to be believed in his biography, there's a lot of infighting that goes on behind the scenes.
Oh.
There's a lot of backstabbing. What we've been seeing throughout this entire saga are the ways that the royal family can sort of lean on the press to do what they want to do. And this is known as the invisible contract, or the invisible relationship between the press and the palace. You know, it's sort of a symbiotic relationship.
Mm.
The press needs the royals in order to sell papers and, you know, to just report stories that people want to read. And the royal family needs the press to keep them in the public eye so that the public feels that they're getting something for their money.
Well, do you think that's why, that this sort of power that the press teams have over the press is why we're not seeing that typical tabloidy speculation that we know those British tabloids love, and that's their bread and butter is speculation, really?
So that was one of the factors that people who follow the royals pretty closely began to notice early on in this whole saga. Shortly after, you know, the palace made the announcement that Kate was in hospital having surgery on January 17th. And then about 14 days later, they announced that she had gone home. Mm-hmm. But during that period of time, there was no speculation in the tabloid press about what her illness could be, or about, say, the circumstance, the dramatic circumstances mm-hmm. leading up to it that made everyone realize Kate needed to have surgery. Or even stories like how Kate is staying in touch with her kids while she's in the hospital, or Charlotte has made get well soon cards yeah. for her mother, stuff like that. There was complete radio silence and no speculation. And that's very uncommon. The tabloid press loves to speculate. Mm.
What do you think is going on here, Ellie?
I have the theory that mainly William, but probably William and Kate too, are the ones who are sort of driving this press operation out of Kensington Palace. Because we know in the first statement that the palace released, it said it was Kate's express wish that she be given privacy and that her medical issues were not made public. I think whatever is going on, they are very strongly invested in making sure that there is absolutely no compromise with the press, that everything is on their terms. And you have to listen to your public relations team for them to have any effect on how the public thinks of you. So my impression is that whatever this is, Kate does not want to be seen. And that's her right. It's her perfect right for privacy. But there's a way that the palace could have rolled this whole thing out and could have sort of fed the beast and pacified it a little in ways that didn't invade Kate's privacy early on. If there hadn't been so many missteps, particularly when you compare the actions of Kensington Palace to how Buckingham Palace has been handling the King's medical crisis.
Yeah.
Public can see in how these two different parts of the royal family press apparatus treated their principal having some sort of medical issue. The information they're giving about the king, the way the king's been seen in public, videos, personal statements posted on social media. You can't help but look at that and sort of wonder, what's wrong with Kate that they can't do this, that this isn't happening?
Former BuzzFeed News royal reporter Ellie Hall, thank you for your time. I have been losing sleep over this, so it's been great to chat. And Ellie is and has been covering all of this extensively. I would highly suggest Googling her name and or keeping tabs on all her social medias for updates as well.
Thank you very much.
Remember, if you're enjoying what you're hearing, chuck us a like and a follow on your favourite podcast platform, because not only will it mean you get all the latest Kate Middleton updates, because I have never been so invested in something, but it'll also mean you get to hear more feel-good stories like this next one. In Queenstown, builders are getting their hands dirty with the construction of a new house, and while that alone is nothing special, this house has a very specific purpose. Once the so-called five-bedroom Hope Home is fully built at Hanley's Farm, it could net more than $1.75 million at auction, with the profits going straight to Mike King's mental health charity, I Am Hope. It's the passion project of former policeman and Fowler Homes managing director Jason McGurr and his wife and business partner Jen. So how did he come up with the idea in the first place? Well, he's here now to tell us. Jason McGurr, kia ora.
Hey, good morning.
Jason, first of all, what sparked this idea?
Well, first we heard Mike King reaching out through media channels asking for help. And when I was in the office listening to him on radio, and my wife was, doing the school drop-off and heard the same thing, we got together and thought, in the future, we want to be able to do something to help. And then it came up, we could use our company position to do something really, really good. So that opportunity came up and we went for it.
And is it every single cent, or is it every single cent of profit that will be going to the charity?
It's every single cent of profit will be going to charity.
Nice.
We've had the Fowler Homes Foundation registered as a charity. So yeah, every dollar raised is going to go. And between myself and Jen putting the section in below value and all the supply assistance, it's going to be a really, really good outcome.
Well, that's how good an outcome is it going to be? Because the cost of construction is constantly on the rise, right? Have you had things donated to make sure that that profit, that bulk that you're going to be able to send to I Am Hope is, you know, something good?
Yeah, you're right. The cost of construction is going up daily, which we try to fight against. We have had really, really good supply support, whether it be, you know, partial or full supply. Everyone has their own businesses to take care of, so we don't want to be creating more issues by taking more than people can give. But some of the big players have come to the party, and the smaller single man operators are doing what they can, and they've seen what we're doing personally and the Fowler Homes group, so they're more than happy to participate.
And when will it be ready?
So we're looking at being ready for live auction in October, but I expect the house to be finished August, so we can get it fully landscaped and get some good open homes running with the team from Bailey's to get the best momentum going forward to auction day.
And how much are you hoping to get in on auction day?
Yeah, without being too bullish, you said the 1.75. My expectations are nothing south of 1.85. I'm hoping a couple of investors could, you know, duke it out, pay a little bit more since it's for charity, which is great.
Fowler Homes Managing Director and the man behind the Hope Home, Jason McGurr, all the best for the auction. What an epic project you are leading here.
Hey, thank you very much and appreciate the time.
If you love penguins and postcards, A, that's a niche combo, but B, you are in luck because there's a post office in Antarctica that's currently looking to hire 3 staff members to sort the mail and keep count of the colony of Gentoo penguins on the island as well. I'll get to the penguins in a second, but first I will give you the details. The post office is at Port Lockroy Base on Gaudia Island in Antarctica and is the world's southernmost post office. It's not exactly a groundbreaking or surprising fact there, but even though it's at the bottom of the world, the UK Antarctic Heritage Trust that runs the post office claims it processes up to 80,000 letters and postcards a year, the majority of which are mailed out by passengers on cruise ships that stop at Gaudia Island, but still, 80K, that's a lot. Now, to the info we all want, the pingies. There are around 1,500 Gentoo penguins that live there at Port Lockroy, so part of all 3 jobs on offer is to assist with penguin monitoring. You've got to be on penguin watch at all times. The job application says you'll get training and then you'll be asked to write a written report at the end of the season as well. Best gig ever, I reckon. Post office in the middle of nowhere, penguins that need watching. Sign me up. That's Newsable for today. I'm Imogen Wells, and I wonder if all the penguins have different names. I'm talking like Jack and Jill, not Penguin 1, Penguin 2, like actual names. Or Bean. Bean's a great name for a penguin.
If you liked listening to this pod, help us make more like this. Visit stuff.co.nz/support.